notes on Parsha as usual. I didn't give a drasha last year, so again we're going to be winging it a little bit, but just to be yotzei to have some something to say on the Parsha. I'm part of this program that you may have heard about called Smichas Chaver. So one of the things that Rav Yehuda Goldberg provides us with is a Dvar Torah on that week's Parsha. So I'm going to share with you the Dvar Torah that he had on this week's Parsha, and maybe just add a little bit here and there to the idea. So the kasha that he starts with is a kasha and a medrash. You know, the pasuk tells us in Parshas Vayetze that Yaakov worked for Rachel sheva shanim v'yubeinav ki yamim achadim ba'avaso osad. That it was it went by quick. It went by like that because he loved her so very much that it was ki yamim achadim, even though it was 7 years. So the medrash in the psikta doesn't raise a question, but just makes a comparison that here you have yamim achadim, and yet in the shibud in Mitzrayim, the shibud that we have was yamim rabim, and the medrash highlights that yeah, when you're suffering and going through a terrible, terrible shibud, then it's going to be yamim rabim. Then it's going to be no matter whether it's long or short, it haven't been very long, but it's going to be yamim rabim. Aval b'zman shem ovdim b'simcha nikrayim mechadim. But when you work and you're working b'simcha, you're working with this great sense of joy each and every day, so then it's called achadim. Shenemar v'yavod Yaakov v'rachel v'yubeinov kiyamim achadim. So since Yaakov, each and every day, he was working with a great sense of simcha, it was yamim achadim. So the kasha is that it's one thing to say it was worth it. It's one thing to say, you know, in comparison to Rachel, to the payoff at the end, it was a small price to pay, that she was so worth it that 7 years of hard work is a small price to pay, and in that sense, it's yamim achadim. But that's not what the Medrash says. The Medrash says that he was working b'simcha, b'zman shem ovdim b'simcha, that Yaakov was working with simcha. It doesn't seem that that's actually true, at least not Yaakov's self-assessment of what happened. When Yaakov himself tells us, doesn't tell us, he tells Lavan what it was like to work for Lavan. He tells Rachel and Leah what it was like to work for Lavan. So Yaakov does not say, oh, you know, I had the best job over the last 7 years. It was just so much fun to go to work every day. You know, there are some people that love their jobs so much that, like, you know, they wake up in the morning, they're like, they can't wait to get to work that day. I have such jobs. I have many such jobs, right? That I can't wait to get to do what you do every day. And there are some people that it's like such a grind. It's so hard to pull themselves out of bed to go to work each and every day. I was meeting with someone recently who said, like, it just occurred to me, he was someone who did an accounting internship or something. He said, do I really want to be an accountant for the rest of my life? And there are some people that, yes, that absolutely, like, my father loves it. Like, it's, you know, like, he's an accountant, he loves it. My wife hates it, right? But, you know, there are different people that react differently to their jobs. So Yaakov Avinu had this job. Is this the kind of job that he would say, this was awesome? Well, we know it's not. He complains, I didn't sleep for years, I was frostbitten at night, I was in the scorching heat during the day, your father switched my wages, or he tells Lavan himself, you switched my wages 10 different times, you switched. Switching wages doesn't mean he got an annual bonus, you know, every year, or he got like a raise every, like, the whole conditions of how I was going to get paid were totally changed on me. Whenever it was going to work in my favor, all of a sudden it was changed on me. How do you describe that as working with a sense of simcha? A second kasha, not raised by Rav Yehuda Goldberg, but a kasha that I heard from Rabbi Ephraim Shapiro on my drive home last night, in the name of the Ger Rebbe. He didn't say which Ger Rebbe. All the Ger Rebbe's were Talmid Chacham, so he didn't say which one. But one of the Ger Rebbe's raises the following question. It's a well-known Rashi in the beginning of the parasha. Yaakov is going to sleep, and the pasuk describes how he took me avne hamakom. He took a bunch of the rocks from the place where he was, and it also describes that ultimately it was only his head was on one even, was on a single rock. So Rashi famously comments that all the rocks were arguing with each other, that Alayin Yech Tzadikas Rosha, that I want the Tzadikas to put his head on me. No, I want Tzadikas to put his head on me. So Akadosh Baruch Hu made a miracle that since they all wanted such a gewaltig zchus of having the tzaddik put his head on them, that they all combined together into one big rock, and therefore they were all zochet to that zchus. So ask the Ger Rebbe, how big were each of these rocks? And how big were they when they combined, right? Meaning, if each rock was roughly the size of a pillow, right, so then each rock would be the size of where his head can fit. So when you combine them, when you push them all together, so his head was still only on one of them, because, you know, now he has this 10-foot rock, and his head is still only on 9 inches, right? Meaning on whatever area a head would go. So all the other rocks should have still been equally unhappy. Why is that? Meaning to the extent that we understand any of this and what it means for a rock to be unhappy, and for how does that solve the problem? A third kasha, I think we may be discussed in an earlier parsha discussion, when the Rambam describes how a person is supposed to feel about his wife and act toward his wife, really act toward his wife. The Rambam describes that he's supposed to be ohava kigufo and mechabda yoser migufo. Mechabda yoser migufo means that if there's only one portion of dessert left, and she loves that dessert and you love that dessert, she comes first. That she gets the dessert, not you. Mechabda yoser migufo. Someone's got to get new clothing. It could either be you or her. It's her, right? That's mechabda yoser migufo. But why not ohava yoser migufo also? Why is it only ohava kigufo? And mechabda, that's yoser migufo. That's going to be more. So a basic yisod that Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson, again from Rabbi Dagolvich, quotes Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson, that I think helps answer all of these questions. And it really helps to define a certain madrega of ahava. You know, there are two levels of, there are many levels of ahava, but two basic levels of ahava. There's a sense of ahava that, you know, when you're with somebody else, they make you feel good about yourself. So you love hanging out with them because they make you feel so good about yourself. It just makes you happy, whether they're telling you nice things about you, or they make funny jokes, or they do fun, they have similar interests with you. It's just, you're happy to be with them because they make you feel good. And that's usually how relationships start, right? I mean, you usually don't get past square one. It's like, you know, you wouldn't like come back from a date and say, like, it was a miserable, miserable time, but like, I could see how one day our souls can connect, you know, like, it doesn't, it has to first be like fun, it has to first be like enjoyable, it first be something that makes you feel good, but that's a base level of ahava. But then there's another level of ahava that's much greater, and that is when you love the person so much that seeing them happy, even if it's costing you, even if it requires some mesiras nefesh on your part, but seeing the other person happy brings you joy. That's what makes you happy, even though what you're going through shouldn't be making you happy at all. For example, you ever see a grandparent buy a gift for their grandchild, and the grandchild very much wants the gift, and something that the grandparent knows that the grandchild wants, and you see, like, it's Hanukkah coming up, right? So grandparents are going to be buying the grandchildren gifts. So you give a gift to the grandparent, gives a gift to the grandchild. Grandchild opens it up, and let's assume it's like, you know, a cool grandparent. He gets what like the kid really wants, and it's not like, oh, thank you so much for this ugly sweater, you know, like you know, something that, you know, that the kid actually wants. And the kid opens up, and it's like the biggest toy. Like, imagine a little kid, the biggest toy he's ever seen, and it's like got lights and bells and whistles. It will break in 5 minutes. It doesn't matter. He's so excited at that point in time, and is like. If you don't look at the kid's face, you look at the grandparent's face, who's really experiencing more joy? Meaning, when the grandparent sees the kid's face light up, now it just costs the grandparent a lot of money. The grandparent knows it's going to break in a couple of days, and that, you know, this is not something that's going to bring everlasting happiness to the child, you know, or something that's actually going to contribute to the welfare of society or anything. Like, he knows that it's not something that's, like, actually important. But you look at the grandparent's face when the kid opens up the gift. That's joy. That's real joy. Because the joy in seeing someone that you love so much experiencing joy, that's an expression of an entirely different level of ahava. And based on that, I assume Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson is the one that gave this answer to the kasha, that the Torah tells us that up until Yaakov started working for Lavan, who was doing Lavan's shepherding? Like, who did he hire? Who was taking care of his stuff? Well, we know, the Chumash tells us, Rachel was Lavan's shepherd. At the beginning of the parsha, Rachel came out with Lavan's sheep to the well. Apparently she was the one dealing with her miserable father up until that point in time. So every single day that Yaakov Avinu was going and working for this miserable person, and every single day that he was dealing with the tsaros of working for this miserable person, he had the recognition that Rachel was able to take a day off. That Rachel was able to not have to work for her miserable father. That Rachel was able to spend her time doing things that maybe she enjoyed doing. That maybe just living a life that was a little bit happier. So every freezing cold night, every scorching hot day, gave him a certain higher madrega of pleasure and happiness, because he knew that Rachel was at home, warm and comfortable. And therefore, it was an avoda that was besimcha, because it's a higher level of simcha, it's ba'ahava so'osa. It's a simcha that comes because of this great love that he had for her. The love that's focused on seeing someone else be happy, seeing the person whom you love experience that happiness. And that's dafka. That love is enhanced by all of the tinying and complaining about how terrible love on is, because now he knew exactly what he was saving Rachel from. And maybe, says the Ger Rebbe, you know, what is it about the stones? Why were they all of a sudden happy just because they all combined into one? His head was only still on a certain particular area. Says the Ger Rebbe, you can get jealous of others when they are others. But when you completely identify with someone else, when there is no line that demarcates, you know, where the other person ends and where I begin, when your identity is completely, completely bound up with somebody else, then there's no jealousy. Then it's a win for the team. And then everybody's going to be happy. Because it's not about me versus them and who's getting the credit and who's getting... It's just we're all in this together. And that's this higher level of ahava. It's like your happiness actually is my happiness. It's not that, you know, we have a partnership over here and we both have to be able to benefit from this, so you benefit and I... No, when you benefit, that actually is my benefit. And that is, I think we've discussed recently, the definition of the word ahava, right? Ahava is gematria echad. The definition of ahava really is to have this total sense of unity, to have this sense of being one unified person. And that's why mechabda yosem migufo, but ohava kigufo. It's not saying that your ava should be less than your kavod. Mechabda yosem migufo is because that's the definition of kavod. Kavod means that this person is on a pedestal. This is on, so mechabda by definition is yoser migufo. Ahava by definition is kigufo. That's what ava means, is that we are one guf. Ava means that all the rocks are one rock. Ava means that when Rachel is happy, it means Yaakov is happy. So there's no such thing as ava yoser migufo. Because adraba, the ava that I have toward that person's happiness and that person's well-being is my happiness. It is my own emotional and spiritual well-being. So that's maybe some of the lessons. Obviously, it's we haven't had Shalom Bayis in a little bit, so that's a good message for Shalom Bayis to aim for that level. Meaning, a lot of times couples when they think about, you know, whether they're getting everything they need to be getting out of their marriage, you know, the cheshbon is like scorekeeping. You know, what is this? What, how much do you do? How much do I do? How much? How come I am always doing this for you and you're never doing this for me? And that's just, it's not just an unhealthy perspective, because you're totally off in your scorekeeping usually, because everyone is biased in the way that they view things about whether they're getting or giving. You know, Rabbi Reisman pointed out recently that a lot of times when a guy has no appreciation of when his wife is being mevater, he just doesn't even see it as her being mevater. Like, it doesn't even register in his mind. He gave a great example. He said, a husband and wife are having a conversation. They have to go to a wedding that night. The wife says, okay, let's leave at 6, right? And the husband says, no, let's leave at 7, because 6 is a time, too much traffic. I don't want to have patience for the traffic. By 7, the traffic will have cleared up. Let's leave at 7. So she says, fine, we'll leave at 7. In his mind, she was not just mevater. In his mind, well, what I said was sensible. So since I said the sensible thing, I was able to open up her eyes to see how sensible what I was saying is. And therefore, she wasn't mevater, she just understood. She finally got it. So that's not her being mevater. I mean, we're so wrong in terms of how we keep score, even when we try to keep score. But just the very premise of keeping score is off base. Because that's not Ahava. Ahava is not, what do you do for me, what do I do for you? It's us. It's a unit. And if your happiness is my happiness. And that's ultimately the way things operate. One chassan once told me a few months after he got married, I said, like, what should I have emphasized more that I didn't? And he said, happy wife equals happy life. Happy wife, just say it 1,000 times. Like, that's everything. It is. That's everything. But happy wife equals happy life means happy wife means that I'm happy also. Okay.